Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Doug McIsaac with Online for Offline, and George Lane is on the call with me, and we are interviewing today Mr. Mike McAllowitz, Mr. TPE himself. Really looking forward to this call, Mike. You wrote a book that I probably would have written if I ever got around to writing it, took the time to wait. I really identify with your eight principles. We'll discuss those a little bit on this call. I really, really identify with what you have to say about how money getting in the way a lot of the times, and we'll get into that. Mike, your background is great. I mean, you're an actual in the trenches entrepreneur who's built and sold two businesses. That's correct.
Yeah, I've built three, and sold two so far, and the other one's in process. So
that's great. And you've got the Black Star Ventures. Is that the name of it? I don't have it in front of me.
No, but you know, it's funny. Our logo is black. The current business we have is called Obsidian Launch. And what it does is invests in other startup businesses. And our logo has a little black star to it, so I think that's where you're thinking black star.
That is why I was thinking black star. Well, Mike, let's kind of dive into this. Let's start with, well, first I'll say I enjoyed what I was able to read to your book, wasn't able to buy it since it got sold out, but I downloaded the intro in the first chapter. And I've enjoyed what I've read so far. Why don't we start with, explain to people a little bit about your background, a little bit about the background of what a toilet paper entrepreneur is. Let's start there, because I know a lot of our listeners are like, who's this toilet paper entrepreneur guy? So let's go ahead and start with that.
Yeah, a lot of people say that. What does that mean? So, I'll share my story and kind of how it ties into the toilet paper experience. So when I started my first business, I was just recently out of college. I was 24. I was working for a small company, and I went out with a guy from the office for some drinks. And we were talking about the business we were doing and how sucky it is to work for other people. And, you know, while we're talking, we slam back a beer. And then we think, wow, the owner probably is making millions of dollars, and you know, off of our sweat and labor. And you know, another beer gets slammed down, and another beer. And after about five or six drinks of liquid courage within a few hours, then we start saying, why don't we do this on their own, and we can be rich overnight, and the entrepreneurial dream, and any idiot can do this. And with that, we made a pact to leave and start our own business. So that next morning, literally hungover, maybe even somewhat still drunk, I tendered my resignation. And as I tendered it to my employer at the time, I still had the wherewithal to recognize that I didn't have much money or much savings whatsoever, and that if I was unemployed, I probably couldn't go more than a week or two on my own. Particularly because I had just gotten married at that time and had a young child. So I cautiously tendered my resignation and say to him, I'll give you a 4 weeks notice because I'm so important and so influential to this company. I'm your best sales guy you've ever had, you know, blah, 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 and you need me. Obviously, with the kind of the behind-the-scenes plan that I would, walk off with 4 weeks of pay, and time to strategize for my new business. But the unexpected happened, and he said, well, if your heart's elsewhere, you're fired. You can leave this second. So I left that company hungover still with no job and ready to start a business, but had no idea how to do it. I never even knew an LLC or an S-Corp or C-Corp. I didn't know what any of that stuff was. I didn't know you had to have any legal documents. I just didn't know. And panic ensued. That night I went back to my wife and said, hey, you know, good news, bad news. Good news is we're going to be rich. Bad news is I don't know when. I own a business. And I started going out and growing the business. My wife and I had plans to move into a nice apartment in the area and went into instant conservation mode. and looked for the least expensive area we could live that was still safe, and it ended up being a rent-controlled retirement village. So 24, I moved in with my wife, my son, a beat-up minivan into a retirement village, and started the, you know, the quote-unquote entrepreneurial dream. And it took 6 years. And over 6 years of blood, sweat, and tears, the business grew to a multi-million dollar business. I ended up selling it. Then I started another business, grew that quickly, sold it, and then started a third. But what I learned throughout is what I call kind of these toilet paper principles. And this kind of ties in, yes, about the background of the book. Most entrepreneurs aren't what's perceived in the media to be an entrepreneur. So you know, all of us hear about Google and you know Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook and YouTube. These businesses grew to overnight success, you know, truly overnight. And the point is that that's not real. It's not real in that it's not common. It's real. I mean, it really happened. But that's not the common path to successful entrepreneurs. So everyone knows, like, you know, Hewlett-Packard is a great example I like to use. That business started out of a garage with no heat and less than or maybe about $500. Two guys partnered together, and now it's a multi-billion dollar business. And Bill and David, you know, Hewlett and Packard, they witnessed tremendous success, financial prosperity, business success, all well within their lifetime, but it took, you know, 3 to 5 years of ferocious commitment to their cause before they started getting traction. And 10 or 15 years later, they were growing exponentially. And today, they've left a legacy business that can, you know, live on into perpetuity, hopefully. But it's the early stages where we have to apply these toilet paper principles and pull resources out of the air and stuff that are out of the box, not typical to be successful. So just to build a little further on it, I don't want to, I'm kind of lecturing here, I recognize. But
well, we're enjoying this.
Okay. Either you guys are enjoying it or you guys like rubbing your head saying, oh my God, who's this guest? We just invited them.
No, you go. You're just, this is great.
So the toilet paper principle, I liken it to the bathroom experience. Why the bathroom experience? Is because the first thing any entrepreneur or aspiring entrepreneur has to do is immediately recognize that they are no different in their potential than any other entrepreneur that exists. So you can look at Bill Gates or Michael Dell or whoever you want, and many people say, I can't do it. Well, Michael Dell and Bill Gates use the bathroom just like everyone else. So the bathroom is kind of a great equalizer. All humans go through the exact same experience. We are all equals on that plane. Now, the other part of the toilet paper principles is the fact that sometimes you get stuck in the bathroom and you look over and there's those like three sheets kind of hanging, dangling in the wind, and that's the, oh my God, you know, what am I going to do situation. And it's that situation where you become a true entrepreneur. You root through the garbage can, you tear up the cardboard roll, you do these things that would be unquestionable at any other moment, but to, quote unquote, survive that circumstance, you can do it. And that's what true grassroots entrepreneurialism is. And to be a success, you first have to put yourself in a situation where there is no alternative. You have to succeed. Then you have to look at all the resources around you, not the one everyone thinks about, cash, money. You have to look around and say, you know, can I pull stuff out of the dumpster? Where can I live where it's safe and cheap, the retirement village? You know, what can I do to bring on a legal team that's phenomenal, but I have no money to pay them? You know, that's a strategy I use. I went to local colleges and got the best lawyers from local colleges to do my legal work in exchange for being a case study. You know, it's these atypical resources that you start using. You start using ingenuity over money, and that starts setting a foundation not only for success, but long-term health, because now there's a respect for the power of the mind and a respect for stretching the dollar that sets a discipline for life. So I know that was a long answer to your question. I probably ate up the entire radio show, but that's the answer.
Oh, no, we still got 35 minutes left. We're good. I, the concept of doing whatever it takes is probably something that is, you know, guys that have been out there doing it, you know, that have businesses have an understanding of it. But people that are going, beginning to start businesses don't really, really truly understand it. One of the things I liked what you said is about how you need to put yourself in a spot where you have no choice but to succeed. That is one way to make sure that you are successful. I really like that. Now, I kind of chuckled and said, so how did your wife take it when you went home and said that we're going to have to move? And that was, how did that go?
Yeah, I did. Well, so that moment was not a happy one. As I'm looking her straight in the eye, I see her lips start quivering, going, oh, my God, what did you do? And that's the holy smokes moment. I actually call it the burn the bones moment, and it's the toughest moment, that first leap into entrepreneurialism. In retrospect, you know, we are extremely happy that we did it. But the analogy kind of, you put yourself where there's no alternative. There's a great story, maybe it's a myth that floats around, and I use it in many of my lectures, and maybe you guys are familiar with it, but it's called the burn the boats myth or story. And what it was there was a young military leader from a country that was, their country was engaged in battle with another country that was far dominant, more powerful. You know, you can liken it to that mega juggernaut company versus the small company, the David Goliath. Well, these guys were the David, and their country was basically facing one more battle that they were on the attack, and they knew that if they didn't win this, game over, the country would be defeated. They sent their young first-time commander over and said, you got to defeat these guys, but here's the problem. The enemy has a bigger army. They're more trained, far more trained than we are. They have better equipment, and they're in a defensive position, which in, you know, military tactics is by far the superior position. And when you're attacking them on their land, we're going to send you by boat. So the military commander leads his army of guys over. They land the ships on the shores of the enemy, get ready for battle, and his first command says, gentlemen, now we've unloaded the boats, burn the boats. And the soldiers, the faithful soldiers, light their boats on fire. And then he said one more thing before they went to battle. He says, we have two ways off this island now, either victory or death. And they were victorious. You know, when there's no alternative for retreat, holy smokes, you find a way. And I like to use that little story because that speaks to entrepreneurialism. I mean, when you have to survive, wow, you find a way. You find a way.
You absolutely do. You absolutely do. And you tie that in with having, I know you also talked about having that fire in your belly, you know, that having to have that fire, entrepreneurial fire in your belly, and you need to balance that a little bit with business sense. I know you talked about that in the Scott Adams interview yesterday. Let's talk a little bit about having that fire in your belly to really go after your dreams.
Yeah, so the fire in the belly, a lot of people mistake it for something that it's not. A lot of people think fire in the belly is, I want to get rich. So a lot of people, everyone wants to get rich, right? So I say, well, I want to get rich, and entrepreneurialism is an easy way to do it. And these are what I call the get-rich-quick people. We all hear the schemes. They sound so appealing, but there's very few, if any, that succeed. So a lot of people go into these get-rich-quick schemes saying, well, I think I'm going to be the one. It's really going to work, and then face this huge disappointment. What the fire in the belly is the one thing that you are passionate about to the point where you can't quench the thirst. It needs to be differentiated from hobbies. For example, I play guitar. I love to play guitar. Guitar is not my passion, though. I would argue Eddie Van Halen has a much bigger guitar passion than I do. Seth Godin calls it the otaku. It's this desire that can't be quenched. So when I play guitar, for example, if I play for 2-3 hours, I put the guitar down, I'm done, I don't want to play again, maybe tomorrow I'll pick it up, but I put it aside. I also like to race cars. I had the same feeling. I race around for a little bit, and that cabin starts getting hot. I'm done. You know, stick a fork in me. I don't want to get back out there. But when it comes to entrepreneurialism, I subscribe to all the magazines that everyone knows about, you know, Fortune, Small Business, and Fast Company, Inc. I subscribe to things no one knows about, or a few, the Gazelle's Report, Collegepreneur, Young Money, you know, all these different, hundreds of blogs I'm looking at all the time. I subscribe to 25 RSS feeds just for entrepreneurial blogs alone. I speak to entrepreneurs all the time. I have a regular dialogue with Tim Ferriss. We were just going back and forth on email today and just, you know, suck up what he has to share. And what I recognized about myself, and we all need to recognize about ourselves as entrepreneurs, there is something in all of us that just can't be quenched. So I don't like study or read about entrepreneurialism for 3 hours and put it aside. I may take a break, but I can't wait to get back in there. And, you know, when I hear that you guys want to do an interview, I'm wetting my pants to preach the word about entrepreneurialism. And I will work through the night every night to do it, because to me it's not work. It's purely my joy, my excitement, my thirsty passion. We have to, as individuals, find that. And we have to define it as specifically as we can, what really gets us excited and what can't be quenched. Once you find that passion, you then go as an entrepreneur and build a business around it. The reason you have to do this is because when the slowdown comes, or when the hard start comes, or you are stuck in a retirement village getting started and your wife is fearful and your family is fearful of their future, the only thing that's going to get you through that moment is your passion. And when you have a week of that, a month, or God forbid, a year or two of that, like I have, the only thing that will get you through that is your passion. And it's the get-rich-quick guys that will go running for the hills for the next get-rich-quick scheme that were at one time positioning themselves as your competitors, but they run off. And it's the people that aren't serving their passion, but maybe are true entrepreneurs, but just aren't serving their passion, that when things slow down, like the economy is right now, fold up the doors and reconsider where they're headed. But the people that are doing it because of their sheer love for it will absolutely stick through it for the tough times, kind of grow those roots, and as times start kicking up again, will come out every time as the leader. So to me, that's what passion is, and how you exploit it.
I really respect that. That ties in with your focus on, you know, get rich right. You know, I really like that that comment that you had about how the toilet paper entrepreneur is about getting rich right, having the right focus, the right passion. Do you want to add a little bit more about that?
Sure. So, well, you just nailed it on the head, Doug. The get rich. See, everyone says get rich quick. So I'm like, I got to change this paradigm. That's one of my kind of missions, I think, and to make it get rich right. And what it means, the right part, is defined by a few things. The first, most important, is your passion. You have to be doing what you're passionate about. That's the right thing to do. I mean, you can look at this at any level you want, but I think we as people are put here on Earth with a mission of some sort, and define it how you want. But I think there's kind of this feeling or emotion, the passion inside of all of us that needs to be quenched. And if you do it, it makes you the happiest. So when I'm talking, lecturing, speaking, consulting, anything around young startup businesses, that is my passion. And that's right for me. So that's part of the get rich right. And we all have it for ourselves, be it in anything, automobiles, wine, in a service business, whatever it is. The second component is you have to be bettering the other side, the other guy. So when I go into a relationship with anyone, someone that buys my book, I have to be 100% convinced, not just saying stories in my head or talking out loud that I feel this. I mean, really truly believe that someone that's willing to spend, you know, in the case of the book, $25 for my book is going to get by far much more in return. That's what I consider a win-win.
I love your first line in your book about how you, it's not going to be another book that's all title and no content. I get so frustrated about, and I'm not going to name books, but I mean books were literally, it could be one paragraph, and or it's one chapter, one good solid chapter, and then it's 14 chapters explaining why that first chapter was right. yeah. that happened.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and so there, that actually totally ties into my get-rich-wrong approach. I think a lot of businesses will sell something to really hook the fish, meaning they'll sell a small little piece saying, well, here's a piece, and once that hook is in your mouth, they can pull it tight, and then they start drawing you into all these other things. I think part of the getting-rich-right approach is every time there's an interaction with the customer, deliver overwhelmingly as much as you can and give them as much value in that pack, in that delivery. And if they benefited from it the way you positioned it, they should be able to walk away with it and do something significant. Then it's up to their decision to come back and see if they want more or if they want it delivered in a different method or something. That, to me, is getting rich right. Deliver everything you can the first time. And then it's the customer's decision to come back for more or different things, positions in a different way. And then you, again, deliver in that venue everything you can. The get-rich-wrong approach is tease them and pull them in.
There's way too many companies out there that's what they do, that you get just a little bit. And you keep thinking, oh, there's got to be more there. And you spend more money, and there's no more. It's kind of like the filler in our morning cereals that they put there. You know, it just doesn't fill us up, but we keep thinking there's more there.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's move. We could talk about this one for an hour, but let's kind of move on a little bit to. Back to your eight principles, and I really like to talk a little bit about the slant towards action, and how toilet paper entrepreneurs actually act more than talk. And one of the things that you meant, it's I like the tacking approach. Let's talk about that, and then Let's start with how you recommend not doing a business plan. Let's start there, and then move on kind of to the tacking approach that you talk about.
Okay, so the action over kind of planning. I'm a believer in premature action. And whenever I say that, people kind of get a giggle. But it is the first time I think anyone's ever heard it's good to be premature. But I studied Colin Powell, who was a very great military leader of our time. And Colin Powell said once you have 40 to 60% of the information you need to reach the decision. A lot of people get into this analysis paralysis, or whatever you want to call it, where they have enough information to reach a decision, an educated decision, but want to keep going on and on and on, and ultimately get paralyzed because they start considering too many variables that contradict. So once we have enough information to make a solid decision, and it's congruent with our gut, meaning we feel it because it ties into our passion, that this is right, go for it. So why go for it? The reason is, and this ties into the military tactics that Colin Powell talked about, is in military planning, there is a battle plan for every battle that the military goes into. The thing is that they say in the military is when the first bullet flies, you throw out the plan. There's so many variables going on, so many things that can't be expected, that the plan then has to become dynamic. So just like a business, when you go into business, if you're expecting it to go the way your business plan has the agenda written out, you're in for something, bucko. It's not going to go that way. If a business plan requires us to project, 5 years of financials, who's our dream team of people that are going to be participating, all these different variables. The problem with a business plan is that's not predictable. I mean, if you could predict 5 years of your own financials, shoot, go out and predict the market for 5 years, you'll be a billionaire, you'll be the next Warren Buffett. So most business plans, people write, within 2 months, they're so far off of plan because of the dynamics of the environment and the unexpected things, the business plan goes on the shelf, starts collecting dust, it serves as a good paperweight. And that brings me to kind of the strategy. I have a strategy called attacking strategy. This is it's a sailing term, actually. And how sailors navigate going to a destination is not through a single plan saying this is exactly where we're going. The reason is because there's too many variables. The wind blows, you know, east, west, north, south. It's changing. The force of the wind increases and decreases. Storms come through. Waves get crazy. Enemy ships, you know, come floating by. Land masses are in the way. So what a sailor does is they plot an X on their map of where they want to go, you know, 2 miles away. Then they assess the current variables, the winds, the waves, the enemy ships, the land masses, and say, what can I do for the next 500 yards that will get me closest to my destination, in the most direct route toward my destination, but will avoid the land masses and enemy ships, will maximize the winds, use the waves to my advantage, and they follow that path for 500 yards. Then, as they're completing those 500 yards, they reassess the winds, which inevitably have changed, stronger, weaker, different direction. Other ships have moved. Now that landmass has been passed, maybe there's another one on the horizon. And they realign their ship with the destination they want to head to and maximizing the current variables. And they go forward. And by doing this strategy every 500 yards, a ship starts going in a zigzag pattern to its destination. And it's uncanny because I've used this process. That is hands down the best mechanism for a business to grow. Business plans are a waste. You can't chart out the entire map and all the variables are going to happen because you don't know. They haven't happened yet. So you set your business into the ocean. You first determine what's your destination. I pick something usually 10 to 15 years out. So my third business now, 10 years from today, my vision for it, what I fully intend and anticipate, it's a $53 million company, 220 employees. I know exactly where it's located. I know what the services we're providing. I know exactly how we're getting to those numbers on that day. But rewind to this moment, all I know is what we're doing in the next 90 days to achieve it. Because I know certain variables that were unanticipated. The economy has slowed down. A lot of my indirect competitors are closing shop. Opportunity for me there. You know, buyer trends are changing. The spirit or the interest in entrepreneurialism is at an unseen rate of growth right now in the college market. So I got to evaluate all these different variables, and now I have a strategic plan, a tacking plan, for the next quarter. Businesses, instead of doing 500 yards like the ship, a business needs to do quarterly tacking plans. So I know in the next 9 days, in the quarter just started 8 days ago, what's the most impactful things I can do until December 31st to get me closest to $53 million in revenue in 2018. Then I'll follow that strategy to a T, as aggressive as I can, and at the end of the quarter, I'll evaluate the progress I've made, realign with my destination, $53 million, 2018, evaluate the current parameters, where the winds have changed, how's the economy now, is it better, is it worse, you know, what has the presidential elections done, as well macro scale stuff. On the micro level, what consumers have bought for me, what are they raving about, what do they not rave about. And then I'll readjust my plan and now work for the next 90 days. And by following these small increments, it works. And the proof, by the way, is in the pudding. It's worked for me. My second company, I use this strategy exclusively. Under 3 years, I sold it to a Fortune 500. I can't disclose the exact amount, but it was in the millions. And this strategy was used by a good friend of mine. His name is Brian Scudamore of 1-800-GOT-JUNK. We get together every year in Boston and talk about progress of our businesses. And Brian, I think it was 8 years ago now, maybe 9 years ago, had a $1 million company doing junk collection. And he then invoked his plan. He used different names. He called it his painted picture, but he wrote out his vision, where he intended to go 10 years out. And it was a grand vision. And then he started implementing this quarterly strategy. Today, I think it's a quarter billion, it's billion with a B, dollar business. I think it's $250 million in revenue they're doing this year. And they have locations now, not just Canada, but also in the U.S., Mexico, Australia, England. It's the fastest growth, second or third fastest growing franchise in the last decade. So, I mean, huge success using the strategy. And I encourage everyone, roll out the business plan. It's the biggest freaking waste of time. There might be some good elements, but it's a waste of time. Just know your vision, know your quarterly tacking plan, and you've started now potentially great success. And just one final note, of course I have this information in my book, but really you can visit our website and download. I have my tacking plan, my prosperity plan up there for anyone to see. You can download off our website to get a form that you can use or some direction in developing your own.
Yeah, that'd be good. That's at toiletpaperentrepreneur.com.
Yeah, toiletpaperentrepreneur.com. On the left side, I think it says resources are down. I think it's resources on the left side. You just click on that, and then it says downloadable forms, and all the forms are there.
That's great. It's the I've worked with a lot of clients and explained to them that probably the biggest thing you get out of when they put a business plan together is they tell them the biggest thing you're going to get out of it is the research of your market. So that's probably the number one thing you get out of it. I said, because any of your projections are just beyond the first year are complete BS. I mean, they're because you have no real idea what you're going to be doing and how many, you know, what business you're going to be in. If the businesses that I've started, we've ended up in something entirely different, you know, three years, 4 years down the road.
Yeah. I agree. The research of the market is powerful. One of the challenges, though, is the market changes very quickly, so you need to reassess that, I think, quarterly.
Yes. And once again, your analysis paralysis, you know, you can't get caught up in that. You need to take a look at the market, get an understanding of the market, and then move and make your action. I had a former CEO of mine that said that I had a bad habit of going ready, fire, and then forgetting to aim. And my attitude was, well, yeah. I'm like, well, I'm the one that started this company, and you're the one we hired. So, you know, it's
right.
It does, once a business is rolling, there's a little bit different, little something to keep it. Someone to keep it rolling needs to think more about aiming as opposed to the entrepreneur that gets it started. Needs to just think about that action and firing and getting ready and going.
Right. You do have to fire with a purpose and a direction. You know, one thing, just one little anecdote I think that's kind of funny, just because this is so real to me, this strategy. Even in the rollout of my book, it came out September 30th in October. The evening of September 30th, we did the big announcement. Well, that was the same day the stock market took the 750-point dip, and all the news that we had planned for September 30th and October 1st, I was invited by ABC and CNBC, all changed overnight. And no business plan can prepare for that. No tacking strategy can prepare for it. But because we're so in the mindset of dynamically changing, our entire strategy for giving recognition to the book changed overnight from, you know, go out and start a business to this is the best time when the economy dips, how to exploit it. And then our strategy we're explaining in marketing is the strategy that can be used to exploit a down economy. So it's just kind of funny that, you know, things can change so dynamically. If you just sit there like an oak tree, you might break. You got to be more like the maple, kind of bend with the winds.
Well, that'd be a good topic for us to talk about now is how a TPE can exploit the current economy. What are your thoughts on that?
So I'll give the few quick tips here, and it's in the book, and I'm not trying to give a hard pitch here, but absolutely, if you get value from this, there's more of it in the book. And I don't know if I mentioned yet, but we're going to do free shipping for anyone that's listening. So they go to our website, toiletpaperentrepreneur.com, and use the code FREESHIP. It'll save them shipping, and that's true for international shipping too. But here's some of the tips I have in the book, and there's a lot. Let me tell you some of the tips. The down economy, like what we're experiencing now, is literally the best time to start a business. And it does sound counterintuitive, but it really is. Out of the Great Depression came some of the greatest businesses of all time. And in the current economy, here's why it's working to our advantage to start a business now, today. First of all, we talked about earlier the get-rich-quick guys and gals. they go off the map so quickly. It's like the day traders during the dot-com boom. That was the biggest thing for get rich quick. And the day traders, they were everyone was considering and labeling themselves a day trader. You know, they get an E-Trade account and do a couple of trades in a day. You know, like, I'm a day trader. Well, when the dot-com bust came, all the get-rich-quickers went away, and the ones that were really passionate about day trading were the only ones that stuck around. Well, in a down economy, for any niche, any market, I don't care what you're selling or providing, the get-rich-quick guys often represent somewhere between 50 to 80% of the market. They go away right away. The second thing is the big boys, the large businesses. You know, the banks are an obvious one right now. They go into a kind of a shutdown mode. They button down the hatches, and they lay off a lot of staff. So the second opportunity that occurs during a market like this is A players are leaving the big companies, often with a, I would say, golden parachute, but definitely silver, and they're coming off with, you know, 6 months or a year's severance because these big companies need to button down the hatches. Now you have A players with, you know, fiscal protection. They can support their lifestyles for at least 6 months to a year out looking for a job. So you can get better people at a lower cost point today. It's absolutely the time to start hiring, if you can, to get A players at a low cost point. Another advantage, and this, the first time I heard of it, I thought this was crazy. I did a lot of research on this, and I found it to be statistically true. The best time to sell luxury items is in a down economy. Now, this sounds totally stupid, but, and there are certain types of luxuries. They're called micro-luxuries. The acquisition of micro-luxuries increases during a down economy. The reason behind it is when the economy drops like it is, I was looking to, you know, renovate my house. Can't afford that now, or afraid that I can't, so I put it on hold. That nice vacation my wife and I were planning, definitely on hold. The new car I'm going to buy, I'll wait. My current car isn't so bad. So these big expenditures instantly get cut. But I now have an emotional loss saying, I was so looking forward to that vacation, and I couldn't wait to renovate the house. It was going to be so beautiful. I need to supplant that emotion, and I start going and buying micro luxuries, which could be that, you know, that nice coffee from Starbucks. Well, I'll do two just to treat myself well. Or for me, you know, I'm a guitar guy. I want to go out and get that nice Epson guitar I was thinking about, or the Gibson, really. You know, that would be awesome. Or maybe I'll just start buying really good stuff for my current guitars. And people start going out, and, you know, dinners is a big one, too. Those mini vacations, those, as they say, staycations. People start going out and dining locally and start procuring these different micro luxuries on a very high level. So it's a great time to start a business, particularly if you're introducing a micro luxury, an item that sells usually under $100, but gives the procure a sense of immediate gratification. The most common, successful, statistically proven, I guess you guys will get a chuckle out of this, micro-luxury of all time, it's alcohol. Alcohol is the biggest consumed because there's immediate gratification from it, and it's affordable. So, you know, start selling alcohol. Then, for slightly more established businesses, this is the time to start getting the A players. They are leaving the big companies, and many of them are starting more interested in working for the small guys, and this is the time to get them. There's other tips and tricks, too, that I have in my book, but that's definitely the top three.
That's great. I can second that. I owned a software company when the dot bomb occurred, .com crashed. I'm here in Billings, Montana, and I was getting 3,000 resumes when I posted a position, and we built an amazing team during that. So yeah, there were certainly are A players available, and over the next 6 months, we're going to be seeing lots and lots of great people.
Coming.
Let's kind of roll back through. That was really good. I really did like seeing how you guys changed kind of your message on that. And one of the things that I wanted to talk a little bit with you about is how your use of social media marketing and tapping that into viral marketing was pretty impressive with your launch of this book. Would you be able to talk a little bit about that?
Yep. So the first lesson is exploit your strengths. And my strengths is not social media. So what I did was I hired an A player in social media. His name's Scott Bradley. But and by the way, this is actually a good lesson too. A players don't have to come from big companies. This was a guy that I met at a presentation I did, and afterwards he was very excited about the presentation. We had some beers. And I started doing research on this guy, and he knows social media, and he's a win-to-win guy. That's the people I like to deal with. He's out to help others first and foremost. So we started working together on kind of a trial basis, helping me out, and once we knew he was the guy, we hired him. So the first lesson in social media is if you don't know it and it's not a passion, get someone on board somehow that does know it and it is their passion. Now, if it is your passion, you don't know it, then learn it. Learn it. But here's the things I know about social media and any media. You have to be true to yourself. So everything we're doing on Facebook and all this sort of our blog, it's all truly me. There needs to be an absolute consistency across all the things. So everyone knows LinkedIn, Facebook, blogging, of course, commenting on other blogs, forums is a great place. To talk about the mechanics, I would be at a disservice talking about that. But what I do know is the first experience someone's going to have with me and our brand could be anything. The key to my success, then, is to be 100% consistent on all fronts. And no one can lie 100% consistently, so you better not lie. You better be yourself at all times. And the people that are attracted to it, that like it, will buy it and buy into it and support it. The people that don't like it will just turn away. But the only way you can prove success on social media is to be absolutely transparent and consistent everywhere. So that's what we've done.
And on top of that, something that you have done is you have the right message. You have a good message. Because that's something that people that are trying to game social media out there, who are just trying to use it to game it, I see them on the forums all the time. How do I get people to go to this? How do I get people to do that? And I'm like,
yeah.
You need a great.
If you can't get people to do something, I can't make you do something. The great irony is if I tell you to do something, the reverse will occur. Yeah. If I say, you don't dress well, you need to dress better, your response in your head will be F you, Mike, and you'll actually resist. But if you approach me and then I assist you, then we become an alliance. So my goal is to find people that already want this message and then make it easy, an easy way of getting more of that message.
Yes. And it all comes down to a phrase, saying something worthy of passing on, something you feel you must tell your friends about. Like I'll be honest. I mean, I'm absolutely excited about the Toilet Paper Entrepreneur. And absolutely excited about your message. Really, really enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you.
Mike, we've got 1 minute left here. George has been kind of quiet over there. He and I have been messaging back and forth, IMing, and he's like just he's been kind of like, just let him go.
We got a wild one here, yeah.
Well, I don't think you saw your video. I recommend anybody that's listening to this call, go to their website, at least sign up for the first intro and the free chapter, sign up for the newsletter, and take a look at the video of Mike. It's absolutely a hoot. You in the bathroom.
One thing that's big to us, just real quick, is the video messages. It's a great way to get familiar with someone. So check us out. It's toiletpaperentrepreneur.com, toiletpaperentrepreneur.com. Check me out. Check out the videos. If it resonates with you and you want more, like I said, we will do free shipping for guests of the show, or listeners of the show. The coupon code is free ship, F-R-E-E, ship, S-H-I-P, one word. Go type in free ship, and it'll save you shipping costs no matter where you are.
That is awesome. And I definitely strongly recommend buying the book. Strongly recommend it. It's a little having you on is a little off message for this interview series that I've done, but definitely on message for my listeners. So this is great. George, do you have anything to add last couple of seconds here?
Wow. Well, it's been a fantastic call. Lots and lots of insights here, which are going to need a few listens, I think. You know, I think a lot of people, if they sat and just played the call again and just took some notes, they would get a huge amount of value out of this. Just one more summing up question. Are there three action steps a business owner can take now to improve their business? I mean, say the next 30 odd days.
Absolutely. The first and most important action step is to stop. Now, this sounds crazy, but you got to stop all the other stuff you're doing to allow yourself time to think. So stop means stop doing whatever you regularly do and spend a day somewhere you've never gone before, a quiet lake or a library or someplace where you can remove yourself and just allow the second step to happen, which is thought. Envision what you want. Start writing about the vision, which is weird, but write about the end game. 15 years out, what do you want to be known for? You know, write your own eulogy, what would make you most proudful to hear about on your passing. Then start the third step, which is start taking action. So stop first. Second, your plan, which is your vision, envision, and then start taking action. And those actions will be, what can you do in the next 90 days to start making that vision a reality?
That's brilliant. That is so concise.
That is awesome. I'm not sure if everyone heard that or not, because we might have gotten caught off in the middle, but I'll make sure that I send that out in an email to everyone on our list so they have it, and I'll have those notes with the recording as well. Really, really have enjoyed this call, Mike. We're no longer being streamed. This has been a blast. I really appreciate you coming on with us, Mike. I really do. This has been a really good chance to listen to you and chat with you.
Well, I'm so grateful to you guys. I know I get on my pedestal. It really is a subject I get fired up about. So I hope I didn't talk too much. But thanks to both you guys.
The interview is about you talking. As a matter of fact, I think I talk too much. So. I have to bite my tongue because I always want to jump in, and that was great. I was chuckling with George because George actually started out in the toilet business. So.
Oh, cool!
I did. I used to be a plumber.
Did you really? That's so funny. That's great.
And I've been in those business situations as well. I've been in those situations where it's like, oh no.
Are you from England? George, are you from England?
I'm outside London.
So obviously you know Tom Crapper.
Yes.
So it's funny, in the book I write about Thomas Crapper at the very end, just because the irony is I believe he's the epitome of a toilet paper entrepreneur. The fact he's from the plumbing industry and then he has now an iconic name due to circumstance is just the perfect blend.
Yeah, and it's strange. And his name is still on the drain covers outside Buckingham Palace. I don't know if you know that.
Oh, yeah, I heard. Actually, if you could ever email a picture over, I would love to see that.
Yeah? All right, I'll see if I can find one.
That would be cool.
Plumbing friends.
And then if you guys could, if you could email me your addresses, instead of you guys going by a book, I'd like to send you one as a little thank you to both you guys.
Oh, that's very kind. I really appreciate that.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Just email you at Mike at Toilet Paper Entrepreneur, that address.
Yeah, actually, you know what? We get so many emails in there. It's managed by someone else. If you have Scott's email, which is ScottB at Toilet Paper Entrepreneur, he also has a private one that he uses. If you could send it to Scott, I'll make sure it goes out by tomorrow.
Okay,
that'll be awesome. I'm looking forward to the book. I was hoping they'd have it here local when I missed that first day and you sold out. So I was, and of course.
Yeah, that was a little logistical issue, but it's been resolved.
Yeah, it sounds like it. You've got some more now. That's awesome. Well, yeah. I look forward to reading your book, and I will we'll do everything we can to tell people to sign up to purchase your book because it's been awesome.
Great.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Mike. All right.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Awesome call.
Awesome. Cool. Do you want to take this time for a sec?
Yeah, I've got a minute.
Okay, cool. Excellent. All right, I'll speak to you soon, mate.
Okay, I'll talk to you. Let me log out of this, and then I'll meet you on Skype.